This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Oh, yeah. And when you're 1-0, this music puts a little extra pep in your step. I don't know where this is going this year, but I'm going to ride her till she bucks you.
AFC Week 1 champs, Brian.
That's it. That's it. 1-0.
AFC Week 1 champs, 1-0. Biggest point differential. All those things.
All those things. All the things. All the things that make for a Football Friday here on Sports Radio 610. Welcome in, everybody. Good to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning, and then we are back at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning for Texans Countdown as the undefeated Houston Texans head to Cleveland to take on the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Good morning, my friend. I'm excited. We got a lot of football to get to. It's good stuff.
I'm excited, too. Yeah, good football versus a really good football team, the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
And we had Thursday Night Football last night. We had the Astros throttling the hapless Rangers.
Yes.
It's so weird. I think it was Drew Shirley, my old producer at KHOU, pointed this out on Twitter last night. Just how strange a game baseball is that you could ever even lose a game to the Rangers. Like, convincingly lose a game to the Rangers when you've sandwiched in just these complete demolitions.
Yes.
Of the Rangers. It's just, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Like, yep. Some nights it's just not your night.
No, it's a weird game. Now they got Arizona coming to town this weekend.
They could lose to the Diamondbacks.
They
it
could.
It just happens that way.
It is.
But they can't relinquish their lead on the A's. Or the Mariners at this point. That's how quickly baseball changes.
Yep. It's all about the White Sox. Are you worried about Framber Valdez slicing his finger, apparently, on the wall
I'm worried because do we have any indication of just how serious it was? For those of you who don't know, Framber Valdez was out shagging flies during batting practice, as pitchers sometimes do. Mm-hmm. And apparently he must have stopped himself against the wall or something, and he cut his finger.
Yeah.
What's going on out there? What's going on up there in Texas that they've got sharp edges on their wall, their outfield walls?
Like the cave in Raiders of the Lost Ark or something where there's cutlery coming out of the wall, saws and knives. Hey, well, here, for what it's worth.
That's what happens when you hold a baseball game in a big-ass barn.
True.
It was probably a pitchfork or something.
True, yeah.
Scythe.
Here is Dusty. I don't know how they pronounce that. Here is Dusty on Framber slicing his finger.
You know, he cut his index finger on his pitching hand, and he was leaning against the wall, and there must have been a jag in the wall or something, and he had a light slice in there that makes it tough on your forefinger to pitch. So, but you know, it wasn't too deep, and it's TBA. We're trying to figure out, you know, how long it's going to heal. And he might be able to pitch this weekend.
Okay, my first thought was, I have two thoughts on this, Seth. My first thought was, one, and if you're just waking up, the Astros won 11-1 last night. They destroyed the Rangers again. I had two thoughts when I heard that. One, get well, Framber. We need Framber Valdez healthy for the postseason, so get well, Framber. So that's number one, and I'm not too worried about that. Brandon Belak's going to start tonight, for what it's worth. I am kind of worried about that. My second thought was, I sure am glad that Kyle Tucker didn't run face first into the part of the wall where Framber sliced his finger.
Yeah, you would have lost a cornea, George right. Springer style or something. Remember when Springer scratched his cornea running into the wall?
Yeah.
It would have been like 10 times worse than that.
Yeah, it would have been a stabbing. We would have looked like Mick Foley with his forehead sliced open. By God, he's got a crimson mask. Look at him. Oh, my God. Yeah, so happy.
Somebody giving me a hard time. Yeah, look, I grew up in a farming family. I don't know how to pronounce scythe. Because my family farmed in the 20th century.
Right.
I didn't grow up a serf, in some fiefdom somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the hell a scythe is.
Yep.
Or how you pronounce
Did
it.
Did they tell you how to pronounce it at all on here, on the text page? They didn't?
No.
Okay, they're no help. So the Astros win last night. Did you watch Thursday Night Football last night? It was an exciting game.
I watched the first half, and then I caught up the rest, which, by the way, I think that's why I've realized why I've been moody the last couple of weeks. This flooding of content.
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the season.
Of
I realized, like, it's like when you, sometimes when I was a kid and I used to go into the library, I'd get frustrated because I felt like I had to read every book in the library.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all overwhelming. And that's how I feel at the beginning of the football season. When you have NFL Game Pass, you feel like you should watch every single football game.
Yeah.
So, last night, I watched the first half of the game.
Okay.
I watched Daniel Jones running around all over the place, if not passing the ball all over the place. I saw Taylor Heinicke, former Houston Texans player.
Like
Taylor
10
Heinicke.
Snaps. Yep.
They have a pretty efficient game.
Yeah.
And then I caught up this morning because I wake up at 3 a.m. to watch all the football out there these days. There's one thing I think about the New York Giants, Sean.
Yeah.
I do not like Joe Judge. I do not like him here. I do not like him there. I do not like him on a plane. I do not like him in Washington. I don't like him. I like watching him lose.
Why? What bothers you about him?
Everything. Like, almost everything about Joe Judge. Every time they flash on the sideline and he's flipping out or angry about something. And then I worry about Daniel Jones. Because, look, I don't think Daniel Jones is all that good a quarterback. But every time he screws up, like when he takes a sack on third down that knocks them out of field goal range,
yeah.
And it's a really stupid play, when they flash to Daniel Jones on the sideline, all I can think is he's like that kid in high school who you know his father is a real jerk and that when he goes home, his father's going to scream and yell at him. Except here it's Joe Judge,
yeah.
Not his father. I feel bad for all of those Giants players that, like, okay, anytime they make just an innocent mistake, they're gonna feel the wrath of Joe Judge.
Yeah. I thought Daniel Jones played pretty well last night. Like, I was impressed. I thought I didn't know he had that kind of juice in the run game. I don't know if that was just something they saw on film with Washington. I mean, I don't watch enough Giants football to know what they do play to play with Daniel Jones. But man, you're right. I mean, they those RPOs, they made so many mistakes. I guess that was my big takeaway from that game, Seth. I'm always watching the, especially early in the season, I'm watching these games.
That's why I don't like Joe Judge.
Yeah.
It's a poorly coached football team.
Well, they make mistakes. And look, it's not Joe Judge's fault that Slayton drops a ball that's right in his hands or that Daniel Jones doesn't put. Okay.
Is
it Joe Judge's fault that Dexter Lawrence jumps offside on what would have been a game-winning field goal miss by Washington?
That is.
It's Joe Judge's fault.
That's partly his fault. So, for those of you that didn't see it, which is most of you at this hour, Washington had the game-winning field goal set up at the end of the fourth quarter. They miss it. They miss the field goal, but they get another chance because a Giants defensive lineman barely jumped offsides. It was a legitimate penalty. He barely jumped offsides. It didn't affect the actual kick at all.
Right.
The Washington football team missed that kick, but then they got another chance. But that's the bad luck they deserve, because on what could have been a game-sealing touchdown drive, the second-to-last field goal drive, remember they had the Slayton drop the easy touchdown.
Yep.
So that's not necessarily Joe Judge's fault. But then they had two false starts in a row on the offensive line. I blame Joe Judge for that. A general overall lack of discipline on that football team that comes from a guy like Joe Judge, who's supposed to be the ultimate disciplinarian.
Yeah.
Oh, he makes them run wind sprints. That must make them a smart, tough, dependable football team.
Yeah, I guess my takeaway, if I'm having a takeaway on this Thursday night game between the Giants and Washington that is somehow tied to the Texans, I'm watching the Giants make all these mistakes, and I look at it, I go, okay, well, that's a team that just can't afford to do the even against a mediocre team like Washington, the Giants are a team that can't afford to give away things like that in a game, even against a below average team. That's what the Texans are, too. It's a reminder that the Texans need to play just as – they need to play cleaner, actually, on Sunday against Cleveland than they did against Jacksonville. And they played pretty damn clean against Jacksonville. No turnovers, only five penalties, no holding penalties. Really, if Malik Collins could have just kept his hands off of Trevor Lawrence after the ball was thrown, then they played practically a damn near perfect game against Jacksonville. They're going to need to be perfect on Sunday in all likelihood.
The thing that I kept thinking about last night when I'm watching – the football team versus the Giants was those two physical freaks, Chase Young and Montez Sweat,
on opposite
sides of the defensive line for the Washington football team, and just what a headache that can be sometimes.
Yep.
It just what a nightmare. And Chase Young got screwed early on with a late hit on the quarterback that was. I don't think by the letter of the law that's what they're trying to eliminate or minimize.
Yeah,
he didn't try to – he tried real hard not to land on him.
Yeah.
He didn't – he hit him basically just as the ball was being released. It was a really sketchy call. But anyway, that's what you're going to face in Cleveland is a couple of physical freaks in Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett.
Yep.
Myles Garrett's the bigger headache, obviously, but – With Clowney on the other side, they've got it's a predicament.
It is. Could make for a long Sunday. We'll see. For now, we're enjoying being 1-0, and we will get you ready for the game this Sunday between the Texans and the Cleveland Browns throughout the morning here on Sports Radio 610. All right, Seth hates Joe Judge. There's a lot of people out there that hate, I don't know, Urban Meyer. Who is this year's version of 2020 Bill O'Brien? That's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday. Texans and Browns on Sunday. David Culley, the stock market is up on David Culley right now. His odds of being the first head coach fired have gone from 20-1 all the way back to 28-1. So that's stock up when you are not going to be the first head coach fired.
That would have been a strange, yes. Strange firing. I guess maybe just because the Texans, look, they fired Bill O'Brien not too long after they'd given him an extension.
Right.
And, they fired Brian Gain a year and a half after they hired him. Right, right. Well, he had multiple years left on his deal. So I suppose that part of it made sense. It's just that, it was so clearly a reset year that why would you bother firing a coach in the middle of a reset year unless Jacksonville fired Urban Meyer and you just had to have Urban Meyer or something.
Right.
Yeah. Please God, I don't want that to be happening.
No. David Culley, by the way, 66-1 down to 22-1 to be coach of the year, Seth. So it's a good week one for the Texans. We'll see how we feel on Monday about all this after they play
between
Cleveland.
Vegas and some of these computer models, I feel like a lot of things changed way too much based on week one results.
And I'm here for it. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, I know. It's
fun. The Texans won.
It's good for sports radio.
Yes.
Now, look, hey, The Athletic, the computer is as unbiased as it gets. That computer simulation from The Athletic all of a sudden has the Texans winning 7.5 games, which would feel... If we were in the English league, it would feel like we were going to get promoted to the Premier League.
Yes.
What is it? Is it from Champions League to Premier League or something?
I don't know, but it does feel
like it would feel like
we're about to get the opposite of relegated. Yeah, absolutely. We're like 2 weeks away from that computer just spitting out a parade map. That's it. Like, they're not even going to spit out a win total. totally going to make. Here are the streets that you need to line up at when the Texans win the Super Bowl. That's what we are. All right, so we know last year Bill O'Brien was the first head coach fired. And I think we all saw the Texans struggling out of the chute last year because the schedule was so difficult. I don't know that 0-4 was what we all saw necessarily, and I certainly don't think a lot of people thought that Bill O'Brien would be fired by week four, but he was the ticket that cashed in first head coach to be fired. So, Seth, the top four on the latest list of first head coach to be fired are all very interesting, and one of them is the one that I had when you and I did that little exercise in the offseason, who we think that first head coach is to be fired. You and I picked like three or four apiece. We almost had like a draft for it. Mike Zimmer was the one that I picked that I felt the best about because Minnesota's schedule to start the season is very, very difficult. And Mike Zimmer is a guy he was hired about the same time Bill O'Brien was here. So he's kind of had his chance here to get this thing going. And they've never really gotten it out of second gear yet in Minnesota. And we also know that Mike Zimmer's a bit of an a-hole. Like, he's not the most likable guy in the world. And they've got all kinds of issues in the locker room with their quarterback not being vaccinated and Zimmer talking about that and blah, blah, blah. He's number two on the list right now. Number one on the list of first head coach to be fired is Matt Nagy in Chicago. I could see that, for sure, especially if he keeps riding Andy Dalton for a little while here.
Nagy having a young quarterback, it's either a blessing or a curse. I mean, you take a look at some coaches. And, you know, Jack Del Rio in Jacksonville almost kept getting extensions based on the fact that, well, he's got a young quarterback. What are you going to do? He needs a little bit of time with this young quarterback. And they went from young quarterback to young quarterback to young quarterback with a David Garrard thrown in there somewhere in between. I think that Nagy is that spot where if ownership feels like, all right, look, if he couldn't do it with our other first-round pick, and he's not doing it with this guy, and you can't get Justin Fields ready to play, then, yeah, we need to move in another direction. Let's rip the Band-Aid off and start finding a guy to work with Justin Fields. Mike Zimmer, though, feels more like the guy who might have his players start to revolt on him.
Yes.
Because he's flat out. It's not just that he's calling players out. Like David Culley, criticized very gently and mildly, but criticized players in the media this week. But he did it dispassionately, and he didn't do it, and this is key, he didn't do it as a way to take the heat off himself. Zimmer this year, a couple times, has sounded like he's asking for absolution. Like, well, I'm not to blame. It's the player's fault. It must be the GM's fault. Like, that kind of tone. And he's the only thing that might save Zimmer, Sean, is that I feel like Ziggy Wolf might be afraid of him. I think that kind of like, do you remember in that old television show Seinfeld? I'm too young to have watched it, but back there was an episode that I saw once where what's her name, Raquel Welch was on a Broadway show, and she was such a monster, and everybody was scared to fire her. I feel like that might be Mike Zimmer. He might be Raquel Welch.
Mike Zimmer's Raquel Welch.
Yes, yes. Just as nasty, just as devastatingly beautiful. But people are afraid of him, and they're not going to fire him because they're afraid of him. I do get the. Don't you get the sense? Couldn't you see like Ziggy Wolf going in to fire Mike Zimmer, and Mike Zimmer like somehow making Ziggy Wolf feel like a little man who's afraid to not, like, who's afraid to keep him on for the rest of the year?
Well, yeah. Or Ziggy Wolf goes into Mike Zimmer's office to fire him, closes the door behind him, fires him, and then walks out with his like clothes all torn and scratches on his face and everything. How old is Raquel Welch, do you think? I've got the answer in front of me here.
I bet she is a sultry 72.
She's 81 years old, and she looks amazing.
81?
She's 81. She looks incredible. Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
81?
Yes.
You know who that 70s sports account, what is it called, Super 70 Sports?
Super 70 Sports, yeah.
He tweeted out a picture of young Angela Lansbury. Hamada, Hamada.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those women. Yeah, and then somebody responded to that with a picture of the grandmother from Beverly Hillbillies when she was a young hottie.
The grandmother?
Yeah, when she was young. It's like a photo from 1921. She was smoking.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it a photo or a drawing?
It was a daguerreotype.
There you go.
That's what they called them, I believe.
There you go. All right. So, Seth, if you had to pick one, Nagy is top of the list. Zimmer is next. Urban Meyer is third on the list of first head. Urban Meyer's not getting fired. He might quit, like, in the middle of a game and walk off the field. But he, I don't think he's going to get fired. And then your boy Joe Judge is fourth on the list, Seth. I know who you're rooting for. You're rooting for Joe Judge to get fired. Who do you, if you had to pick one right now and put $10 on it, who would it be?
Let's see. Of those four, I would say, I think Mike Zimmer.
Yeah.
I think Mike Zimmer is, remember when Bob McNair said why he fired Gary Kubiak? Or at least the story was that he fired Gary Kubiak because he felt like he had lost the locker room.
Yeah.
Now, Kubiak, it was for much different reasons than Mike Zimmer. For one, the poor guy had a stroke that year. And two, he had like DJ Swearinger and a few other guys that were just kind of loose cannons.
Yes.
I don't know if he lost the locker room, but he never had DJ Swearinger.
No.
So Zimmer, I think Zimmer might have that same dynamic, though, for different reasons, but he might have lost the locker room.
The Vikings are 0-1. They're at Arizona this week. I think they'll lose that game. Then they have Seattle and Cleveland the next two games. Like that's 0-4 right there.
The guys on this list that I think are more a function of the team situation than the guys themselves would be Vic Fangio, Zach Taylor, and Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Because I think Cliff Kingsbury – did Cliff Kingsbury's odds go down after last week?
Yes.
Because they looked damn good. Kyler Murray looked like, oh boy, it might have clicked
making
for him.
The
like
lead.
It's one game, but he looked like perhaps in any game that I've watched or seen of him or even watched the highlights of, he looked like a more precise NFL quarterback than he's looked before.
All right. We're off and running on a Football Friday. Payne and Pendergast with you. Browns, Texans, Sunday. Noon kick here on Sports Radio 610. Getting to know your opponent. Seth did a little film work, and he's going to smarten you up on the Cleveland Browns. That's next.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday. On Sports Radio 610, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Football Friday. Texans in the Browns on Sunday. Kickoff at noon here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I have you covered on Texans Countdown starting at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. Clint Sterner and I on the postgame show as always. All right, so Seth, you did a rewatch of the Browns and the Chiefs. The game of the week last week, possible preview of the AFC title game, the Browns and the Chiefs last week. If the preview of the AFC title game wasn't that game last week, then most certainly it's this game coming up Sunday between the Browns and the Texans. It's one of the two. That's the preview of the AFC. You heard me. They're undefeated. They're 1-0. I said it. So let's do this here. You watched Browns Chiefs. Ben, we probably need a little something underneath. Thank you very much. What did you see from that game here? We'll bullet point this thing. The Texan fans need to know for the game on Sunday. Let's equip them.
Oh, okay. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't even really thought of this as a scouting report, Sean. So these are my the biggest thing is that Nick Chubb is a beast.
Yeah.
I mean, Chubb is so much better than Saquon Barkley. And yeah, I know Barkley's got his knee that he's still coming back from, but Barkley in his entire time in the NFL has been a lot of what his scouting report feared that he might be, which is, okay, when everything's perfect, when everything's just right, when the blocking is good and he can get some room to run, yeah, then he's awesome. But Saquon Barkley, as you saw last night, like, he can't create on his own. He had some really nice runs last night, but when it came time for the Giants to potentially close it out on a touchdown run, except they ran twice in a row, he just got stymied in the backfield. That wouldn't have happened to Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb would have made something happen. So he is a headache, and then Kareem Hunt is not bad either. Kareem Hunt, you never know with Kareem Hunt, because when Kareem Hunt was in Kansas City, all right, you're taking advantage of all the opportunities that you have because you're playing in that offense, right? But I would say where Kareem Hunt is a hammer, Saquon Barkley is like a bottle rocket, where, you know, Barkley can go further, longer, like faster, but he's not going to create necessarily or bulldoze people over. And I think Kareem Hunt does that. So, like, Saquon Barkley and Kareem Hunt are a real pain in the ass 1-2 punch.
Okay, no, hang on. You're mixing Barkley in here. You mean Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt.
Sorry. Yeah. Chubb and Hunt are a powerful 1-2 punch.
Right.
I was calling Barkley a bottle rocket.
Because
of last night's game.
Yep.
So this is where the test for the Texans is, because the Jags didn't really try to run the ball in that game all that much. So the Texans' run defense wasn't really tested. I'm hoping that that's perhaps something they can hang their hat on this year without electric athletes on the defense, at least by being disciplined and by being physical, then maybe you can have a good run defense. So this is a really good place to start, just to try to slow these guys down.
Yeah, these two, they're about as good a 1-2 punch as I've seen in a long, long time. Yep. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Seth, I'm glad you brought up Barkley from this standpoint. If you're a Texan fan, look, we know what the deal is with this team. They're a rebuilding team. They're going to have some significant draft capital, especially if they move Deshaun Watson. To me, Nick Chubb and Saquon Barkley illustrate the ideal lesson in terms of roster building in the draft. The Giants using a number 2 overall pick on a running back, even a good running back, at the stage they were at, if you're picking number 2 in the draft, you're not at a stage in your franchise building, in all likelihood, where you should be taking a running back with the 2nd overall pick. By the time you've rebuilt your team to where it's good again, you've burnt 3 or 4 years of tread. And in the case of Barkley, now he's had significant injuries. But if the Giants are ever going to be good again, Saquon Barkley's not even going to be a part of that. You know what I mean? Like, he's just not. Whereas the Browns, using an extra 2nd-round pick that they got in the Brock Osweiler trade, use a high 2nd-round pick in a draft where they had multiple picks high and took Nick Chubb and said, you know what, this is a luxury that we can afford. This is a guy who we're not spending the 2nd overall pick of the 1st round. We're spending the 34th overall pick in the draft on this guy. That made a lot more sense than what the Giants did with Saquon Barkley.
Think about how ass backwards it is with the Giants, because it's not just Saquon Barkley. It's that they still have a young quarterback who they reached for Daniel Jones. I don't care what anybody says. There's some Giants fans trying to say, like, well, you look, everybody criticized them for taking Daniel Jones, and now look at him. Like, yeah, now look at him. What? I can't tell what the hell he is.
Right.
That offensive line is horrendous in New York. They took a quarterback without any kind of an offensive line in front of him. I feel like when the Texans end up taking a quarterback that is the quarterback of their future, they're going to have a much better offensive line than the New York Giants do. It's going to be a much better ecosystem for that guy. Speaking of which, the Browns offensive line has some good players on it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a first rounder at left tackle. They got Jack Conklin at right tackle. They got J.C. Treader at center. Joel Bitonio. They've got a good offensive line. So this will be another spot. Just like the Texans weren't necessarily tested in the run game last week, I was happy with the pass rush, even though they didn't get a whole lot of pressures or QB hits. I felt like it was a disciplined pass rush that made Trevor Lawrence uncomfortable. The difficulty level goes up a lot this week because obviously you're facing a better quarterback at this stage in Baker Mayfield, and this offensive line is much, much better. So the Texans defensive line, likewise, if they want to have a shot in this game, they got to take it up a notch.
Okay, so Seth is listing out the things you need to know for this game on Sunday. The running backs for the Browns are beasts. The offensive line is very talented and very good. You mentioned Baker Mayfield. What are the things that make you nervous as a Texan fan about Baker Mayfield?
I think Mayfield's a very bright guy. Well, he's always a bright guy, but now he's a bright quarterback. And I think that when you have a defense that's going to play a whole bunch of zone, you worry about, okay, any zone defense has holes in that zone defense. And if there's not a good pass rush on any particular play, you've got chances of exploiting it. And we saw last week that through a combination of Trevor Lawrence being a rookie and Trevor Lawrence's receivers dropping a lot of footballs more than anybody else in the NFL, there were some opportunities there that the Texans gave the Jaguars that the Jaguars simply couldn't take advantage of. I don't think you're going to have that issue with Baker Mayfield. You know, and Odell Beckham Jr., for those of you that don't know, is injured. He's not going to be playing in this game. But I think that Baker Mayfield's going to have some success over the middle of the field, unless you get that pass rush going. I think that's a huge part of it. And unless the linebackers improve in their pass coverage a little bit. Hopefully from week 1 to week 2, they saw enough on film that they can correct a few of those things. But Mayfield's a pro quarterback now in the way he reads defenses. He had an interception in the 4th quarter that I'm going to 75% excuse, because he was trying to do the right thing. He was trying to throw the ball away, but somebody cupped his foot at just the last moment. Like, as he was already in his throwing motion, somebody grabbed him, and as he was scrambling, and he ends up throwing a pick.
Yeah.
I guess you can make the argument that maybe a better quarterback would have better pocket awareness and know to just bury it somehow there. But it wasn't a It wasn't a stupid thrower decision or anything. It was just bad luck as he was trying to throw the ball.
How much does Baker Mayfield's mobility concern you if you're the Texans?
Not as much. I think because they were relatively disciplined last week. Mm-hmm. Now, Trevor Lawrence escaped the pocket but then made bad throws on the move, whereas Baker's capable of making bad throws on the or making good throws on the move. And he's just more aware and comfortable as an NFL player. Trevor Lawrence is capable. He just didn't do it.
Yeah.
I think Tyrod Taylor's mobility is going to be a big thing. And that's where Tyrod Taylor is. I think in most of the games Tyrod Taylor wins this year, it's going to be kind of like it was last week where he has 40 yards on four carries or what have you.
Yeah.
I think that the run game and the pass blocking isn't going to be quite good enough, especially versus the good teams, for Tyrod Taylor to do it without running. I think you're going to need some mobile plays on him. But then also in the passing game, there's an opportunity there for him versus Jadeveon Clowney and Tack McKinley. So those are the two other guys, other than Myles Garrett, that rush off the edge a whole lot. Tack McKinley and Jadeveon Clowney are both kind of stiff. They're not all that great in open spaces. Mm-hmm. There were some plays made against the Browns last week. Pat Mahomes made some plays where Pat Mahomes he's plenty mobile. He's not as athletic or mobile as Tyrod Taylor. But he made some plays just flat out outrunning Tack McKinley or just kind of ducking under Jadeveon Clowney. And I think Tyrod's going to have to do that a few times. And he's very capable of doing it, so I'm not worried about that. I'm more worried about the plays where Myles Garrett or Jadeveon Clowney just flat out beat the offensive lineman. This is the big, 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 big matchup you want to watch this week. Is Laremy Tunsil still coming back from his COVID legs versus Myles Garrett? That's the matchup of the week. And I don't think the Browns necessarily are going to be as active or adept even at a lot of the D-line stunts in games. They just like to let those big guys on the edge get after it and rush the passer. So there'll be a whole lot of Laremy Tunsil one-on-one versus Myles Garrett. If the Texans win this game, I predict that Laremy Tunsil will be getting a game ball because he'll have had a good game versus Myles Garrett.
Ooh, that's good. I like that. Okay, so what are the non-negotiable things that the Texans absolutely must do if they're going to compete in this game on Sunday? You had to pick a couple things.
I feel like I'm going to say the same thing about every game the Texans play this
year. And Seth, because that may be the case because they're probably less talented than nearly every team on their schedule.
They are. I feel like I'm being very objective when I say this. I'm not trying to be scared of the big bad Browns or anything because they haven't proven it yet, you know. But on paper, and on film, they're just way more talented, the Texans. And Sean and I did this yesterday. You go position by position, it's really hard to find a spot where there are a couple spots where the Browns are not definitively better than the Texans. I would say at left tackle, at wide receiver, or at least for your number one wide receiver position, yep. Brandon Cooks versus
Jarvis Landry.
Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe that's a bit of a toss-up. But other than that, almost everywhere you look, the Browns are definitively better than the Texans. So it's going to be turnovers, which Lovie Smith is harping on.
Yep.
So turnovers, and that I include in that the pass rush. So I think the pass rush has to help those guys out on the back end. You got to get some strip sacks. You got to do that. But realistically, you know, I don't think the Texans have a 4 or 5 sack game in them this week. So it's going to be on the defensive backs being really opportunistic and making some plays on the ball. And then on the other side, really, Tyrod Taylor had one of the best games he's played in the NFL probably. That was the kind of game that he played at times in 2015 that ended up getting him a big contract with the Bills. I think that Tyrod Taylor making some plays off schedule and improvisationally are going to be huge in this game. And just where he can do with Brandon Cooks what he did last week. Hey, extend the play a little bit. Get Brandon Cooks down there. And you know, last week it was into double coverage a couple times. This week, maybe you catch him with zero coverage, no safety help over the top, mm-hmm. Brandon Cooks alone after Tyrod Taylor's extended the play.
Yep. You get opportunities like that, you got to take advantage, no doubt. All right, so Seth getting you ready for the game on Sunday between the Browns and the Texans. Noon kick right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, you were validated again yesterday by a member of the Texans coaching staff. I don't know if you knew this.
Which one is that?
Well, you've been harping all week long about what a dog Mark Ingram is. Like about
in a good way.
A next-level dog. Yeah. D-A-W-G, not D-O-G. He's next-level dog like we haven't seen in this locker room. Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans yesterday on Mark Ingram.
Mark's a fiery dude. You know, he's brought an edge here in the offensive room that I'm not sure we've had for a while. He's a physical runner. He's a great leader. He comes to work every day and prepares and takes care of his body. And he's everything you want as a person from that standpoint. And then when he straps it on, he's got an edge to him. And again, I think that's contagious with the type of person he is and the way he goes about his business.
You know, I've been trying to monitor this, and I will continue to monitor it during the season. A lot of times when the guys who are really good when they're mic'd up, sometimes those guys get reputations as being the awesome team leaders and everything, and yet they're actually despised by their teammates because they're annoying. So I wanted to be really sure about this. Okay, wait a second. I got to watch guys' responses when Mark Ingram is talking to him. Because what if he's just this guy that the coaches think is awesome because he gives pep talks and everything, but he gets on everybody's nerves? I see guys respond to him the right way.
Okay.
Guys are like, yeah, let's do this. Because it's a fine line you got to walk. Like Ray Lewis. If Ray Lewis weren't such an awesome football player, he would have been insufferable. Because there are a lot of guys, a lot of guys that like Ray Lewis would tell you, like, I don't know, man, sometimes he starts giving these speeches and it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, he's just talking nonsense.
I've talked to some of those people before.
Yeah. And those guys, like, they don't necessarily get moved by Ray Lewis's speeches, but it doesn't annoy him because it's just Ray being Ray.
Yeah, they know
he's
the
one
deal.
Of the best, he's one of the best linebackers who ever lived, right? So it's kind of cool still. It's like, even if this pep talk's annoying me, he's one of the best linebackers who ever lived. Where with Ingram, the thing that he does that I really like is he's always talking to guys about themselves. He's always talking about like how great they're going to be and how awesome they're going to be and how much we need out of you and everything, which never gets old. As Abraham Lincoln said, if you talk to people about themselves, they'll listen for hours.
I like that.
Kids. That's a big. If you struggle with the social skills or what have you, just remember. Knowing a person's name and then talking to them about themselves, even the least vain person in the world doesn't mind hearing or talking about themselves every now and then.
Amen to that. Yeah. All right. One more from Tim Kelly. Look, I don't think any of us expected Mark Ingram to have 26 carries in the opener against the Jacksonville Jaguars. It was far from a backfield by committee. Phillip Lindsay got a few touches. David Johnson got even fewer. Terod Taylor mixed in some scrambles, as Seth pointed out earlier in this segment. Here is Tim Kelly on the plans for riding the hot hand in the backfield.
Load management seems to be a popular term since the NBA, right? Again, you go into a game with a plan and you have an idea as to what plays you want guys to run. But when you get going and you figure out what type of game it is, you know, at least from what happened on Sunday, you know, Mark had the hot hand. He was running hard. He was finishing runs. He was dragging defenders. So when that happens, it's kind of like, okay, well, this is the type of game. This is what's going to end up giving us the best chance to win. And you kind of ride the hot hand a little bit. Again, like in week two, I don't know if load management really comes into play. I think that's probably going to be a little bit more prevalent here once we get into November and December. But, yeah, for me at that position especially, it's riding the hot hand.
All right, so I hear that, Seth, and I say, okay, this is a close game. Mark Ingram is getting 25 carries again.
I know. That's what I worried about when I heard that. I mean, it's fine what he's saying, what Tim Kelly's saying. I'm not criticizing what he's saying. What I worry about is that who are the guys who are capable of having a hot hand in the defensive backfield? So far, I haven't seen it out of Phillip Lindsay.
Yes.
You know, not during the preseason. I didn't see it last week. Like I'm not all that thrilled about Phillip Lindsay and his potential. David Johnson might end up having the hot hand in specific game plans. I think when the Texans are able to spread it out, when they're able to get him involved as a receiver, especially matched up on linebackers, obviously, I think there will be games where David Johnson might be the hot hand guy. It'll be a different fashion than Mark Ingram. But, yeah, I worry that, yes, load management is something you might worry about later in the season, except that If Mark Ingram has four games in a row where he has 20-plus carries, then all of a sudden load management becomes an extreme concern later in the season.
Yeah, that was my question, was going to be, is there such thing as a Philip Lindsay type of game or a David Johnson type of game? I'm with you on David Johnson. I actually think there is probably a David Johnson type of game out there that's very, very different than a Mark Ingram type of game. But right now, the Mark Ingram type of game is the one that they're going to need on Sunday for sure. All right.
There's a Scottie Phillips game perhaps at some point.
That would be nice. That would be nice. The text page would love that. All right. Speaking of the text page, 713-572-4610, if you want to hit us with a text here on the show. As we head into the 7 o'clock hour, four lingering Texans questions as we head into week two on Sunday, including two young players getting Wally pipped next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.